Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Welcome back to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We are talking about the global refugee phenomena today with two representatives, Dr. Camilleri and Sister Coughlin of the Jesuit Refugee Services. And as always, you can join the conversation at 888-322-8465. I wanted to follow up on this question, Doctor, if forgiveness is such a vital part of this process of reconciliation, how does it play out when you have different traditions, maybe non-Christian traditions, that might have a different understanding of exactly what forgiveness is and how it works?
Well, I'm not an expert on different traditions, so I can't really speak to that. However, what we find in practice is that I think as human beings, all of us have some kind of an understanding of forgiveness and what it means and of the need to forgive in order to move on, in order to build relationships. We work with refugees who are mostly not Christians. In fact, the majority of refugees in Malta would be Muslims. And many of these refugees are involved in our programs. So, for example, in our school outreach program, many of the volunteers who visit the schools to speak with students would not be Christians. And I think it's very important to bring in different perspectives, even because within a society like Malta, there's quite a lot of prejudice and a lot of stereotyping of people who are perceived as different, whether for ethnic or religious reasons. So we find it key to have people who are different. And I think what we have learned over time, even discussing the program with different people who have collaborated, be they, for example, the teachers in the schools where we visit, but also or students in their responses or the refugees who are part of the program, I think all of us, the feedback, it's clear from the feedback that all of them see it, and we too see it, as one way of increasing understanding and true understanding to start to, maybe they wouldn't call it forgive, but yes, to understand the other better, and so to perhaps forgive the hostility and the real or perceived negative attitudes towards them, refugees feel, and so to move on and to take the step to start maybe integrating more and building more of a life in
Malta. It begins with understanding.
It begins with, yes.
Yeah. And Sister, is that your experience too?
Yes, partly. We had a very famous Buddhist monk called Mahagosananda, and what he often quoted was, "Hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed." Mm. That metta karuna is the binding principle. And one of the strategies we tried to use was to put together people who are refugees and non-refugees, people with disability and without disability, Christians and Buddhists, national and international men and women working together in the same team on a project that helped other people. I mentioned before this man with no legs who was a leader in the landmine campaign, and just last week I was talking to him about the Year of Mercy. And he said, "Well, I think it's pretty easy, even though I get angry myself when I think about losing my legs. But really what the Pope's asking for, I think, is that we fix up our own hearts first, that we support the people closest to us first and not judge them, that we go out to the needy and the lonely, and that we forgive." But then that becomes the crucial question, how do you forgive? And I think Katerina was touching on that.
Right. Now, I would imagine that each day brings with it new lessons, new experiences. I wonder, Sister Denise, could you speak a little bit about how your experience working against landmines has sort of impacted the way you approach the work you do today, and what, you know, whether or not you see them as connected, and what sort of lessons have carried over?
I think one of the key lessons in both the refugee work and the landmine work was allowing, as Katrina said before, the people to speak for themselves, to give their voice at the United Nations, to give their voice to the people in authority. That's one. But I think the overriding thing is that that in whatever ever advocacy we're involved in, it's creating these inclusive communities of love, which is the other thing that the Pope stresses so much. These are the ways that really affect permanent change, slow, patient, but enduring.
Right. I think that there's often a perception of refugee communities and maybe even working in with refugee communities as an experience that's very much filled with trouble and sorrow. And I imagine that is the case. But I would imagine there's also much joy to be found. And I wonder if you could speak to a moment of joy that you have witnessed or experienced in your work with the refugees.
Probably the one that comes to mind right now is of a very wonderful young Ahmadi Muslim woman from Pakistan. She was refused refugee status. Well, she was threatened to be refused refugee status unless she married the policeman who was interviewing her. She came to stay with me in our reflection centre at Siem Reap. But the day that she was actually granted refugee status and was told she could go to Canada, she came roaring up the stairs. I was at an important meeting, but she couldn't care less. She just barged straight in to give me this great hug to say it's really, really happened. So that was a day of great joy. And I think I said last night a day of hilarity was when another refugee got his resettlement notice and he did cartwheels in the office. He's 70 years old.
That's quite impressive. And Katrine?
There are many, I suppose. But I think, you know, whenever we manage to achieve something for someone, with someone, no matter how small, I think for us it's always a moment of celebration and a moment of joy. When people are granted protection, sometimes after years of you know, hassle and paperwork and appeals, and you know, in one case it took 8 years of going, you know, first appealing, then going to court, and then going back to the appeals board. I mean, after 8 years, it was the first time I saw this man smile, you know.
Wow.
Sometimes you would say, okay, it's not, maybe it's something small, but I think we know that for the individuals concerned, it's made a massive difference. And I think for us, this is what keeps us going. Because sometimes it's painful when you work in a situation where the bigger picture, which is causing so much suffering, doesn't change as fast as you would like it, or doesn't change as you would like it. It changes for the worse, not for the better. Certain bad practices become more institutionalized. So sometimes, you know. But at the same time, when in spite of this, you see that you do manage to make a small difference in the life of someone, I think that is what really, you know, it makes it worthwhile.
Because, you know, we were talking earlier about how when you're so far removed from the lives of folks who are refugees, like we are here in Midtown Manhattan, you know, you see what you see on the news, you read what you read in America Magazine or the New York Times or whatever, and it can seem very overwhelming, and it can seem very dark, bleak almost. But another advantage of actually being on the ground and seeing people is you also have those moments of great joy and consolation and celebration, right? When something great happens, when there's some breakthrough, and I imagine that's a great grace. How did you get involved in this work? What motivated you?
Well, I worked in Papua New Guinea for 10 years, and then I was back in Australia, and the Jesuit Refugee Service was looking for somebody to go to Site 2 refugee camp, and I volunteered, and I can't even consider I was the best volunteer because nobody else did. That's how I got into this. And then I got into Cambodia through a discernment process where we worked out that if you just by staying in refugee camps, we could be prolonging the war rather than bringing peace and reconciliation between people. So we chose to go as well inside Cambodia, and that's how I got there. But can I just go back to the last question about the moment of joy? Because it is the Christmas season, and I think probably the most beautiful moment was the day that a new baby was born in one of the refugee camps. It says that the cycle of life is going on, that there's joy for the world to come, and that's just something special for me.
And that, of course, the Lord became incarnate as a refugee, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
How did you get involved in the work?
I heard about JRS many years ago, but at that point there was no JRS office in Malta, so it was just a beautiful image which stuck with me. Then later on, as a lawyer, I worked on a few refugee cases through the office where I was working, and then eventually as a volunteer with JRS. And then the opportunity came to work with JRS. Like Sister Denise said, I don't think there would have been many applicants, but I kind of offered my services before they could even issue a call, and I was accepted, and I never looked back.
What advice would you offer to people who would like to be more involved in helping to solve a refugee crisis, or helping to reach out, or helping to build that community, or... You know, what can people do, I think, who, especially folks who might live in places that are, do not have an obvious refugee population?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to remember that there are people who are refugees. Because I think if you live in a context where refugees are just an item in the news, it's very, very easy to forget even that there are people, and people like you, with needs. I think... It's also important to look for accurate information, not to just swallow everything that's presented on all the news channels. And it's also important to look beyond the media hype to see people, as we were saying earlier. I think maybe we're not in direct contact with refugees. Maybe we can't offer a direct service. I think many people can, mind you. Mm-hmm. I think few of us are so far removed from, or we live in some, I don't know, I think you have to live in a glass bubble today in the world to be far away from refugees. I think very often they're there under our nose and we don't see them. Maybe because we don't want to, maybe because it never came to our attention. We never thought about it. But
right. But
the truth is that today, I think wherever you look, you're quite close to refugees, and if you want to take notice, I think that in those cases it's very possible for us to reach out, for us to open our hearts, our homes, our lives to people, you know, because this is what welcome, what hospitality is about. It's about making other people, welcoming other people into our lives, into our communities. And not a kind of a, I'm being charitable, I'm being nice, I'm giving you a package at Christmas, I'm organizing a party for refugee children, these kind of token one-off events. I think as Christians, I think the spirit of welcome and hospitality should be part of who we are. This is what should define us, yes? Jesus says, you'll be known by your love for each other. So I think that's a very, very, very powerful, especially today in this context where we're doing the very opposite and closing ourselves behind walls of fear. Mm. So I think the first step would be that. For those people who can't, I think there's a lot you can do to support other people's efforts with refugees. There's a lot you can do to combat misinformation. There's a lot you can do to live with an open mind and an open heart. So I think that would be mine.
Sister Denise, would you add anything?
Yes, I think... just move out in friendship to at least one refugee. That's a start, to know somebody as a person. And then, I mean, everybody's got some kind of skills that can help. Maybe some legal advice, maybe some financial advice, maybe coming and visiting and into refugee situations. But, I mean, if we're really motivated by love, as you were saying, I think this is the key, that in each little or big person that we meet the face of Christ. And I think especially in welcoming the stranger, we do that.
What is the, this question just occurred to me, what is kind of the operational definition of a refugee for JRS? Like, you know, how do you wonder... What's the difference between a refugee or a migrant and an immigrant? Some of our listeners may be wondering.
Pass on to the lawyer.
but you're not asking for a legal definition. Well, the legal definition of who a refugee is clear perhaps, but and it's referring to a very particular group of forcibly displaced people. I think in JRS we use a definition that's a little bit more elastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't stick to the strict legal definition, which talks about people who have a well-founded fear of persecution because of who they are or what they believe. Those two, of course. But I think we're looking at people who are forced to move often because of reasons beyond their control, and many of whom have, let's say, protection-related concerns, even if they're not, they would not fit within the legal definition of refugee. Many of the people we support, I'm taking Europe as an example, but I suppose it's the same the world over, are in fact people who fall outside of the legal definition and so find themselves in a situation where they're often stuck and without legal rights, which effectively means that your life is very limited, your access to very basic services and rights is very limited, your future prospects are very limited. And I think you could also find yourself in situations where you're deprived of your liberty pending removal or whatever. So I think there are a group of people who are of great concern to JRS, very close to our heart, because often they find so little support from other agencies, institutions, government, etc. So I think there's a great need there.
And we talk a lot these days about mixed refugee flows or mixed flows of people. And as you mentioned, included in this are asylum seekers, some refugees, some migrant workers or illegal, some trafficked people, all are in need of protection, which may be defined under different legal conventions. But many, many, many are also in need of food, shelter, housing. And I think this is what JRS reaches out to. Those, as well as the legal need, the need to really see the dignity of each human person and respond to the need that they present.
And to treat the whole, and to minister to the whole person.
Exactly.
Right?
Spiritually,
in all of their needs.
Well,
right.
Yes.
Well, and we should also mention that people can learn more at the website here in the U.S., jrsusa.org. That's jrsusa.org. We're very big fans at America of your work and what the Jesuit Refugee Service does throughout the world. And you can count on our support and our prayers. And thank you very much for your service and for being here today.
Thank you.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk to our favorite poet, Dr. Philip Metris, the winner of the inaugural George W. Hunt S.J. Prize for Excellence in Journalism, Arts, and Letters. And he's going to be on to talk about poetry, Advent, and his work at John Carroll University. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.